This is True North Story, the original podcast series. Learn, love, listen, live. With your hosts, Tama Fulton and John Hudson Masserol. Are you ready to discover your True North story?
So things are working out. Just got to stay hot. I try.
He's hot.
Wow.
He's so hot. He has no idea how hot he is.
Yeah, but let me tell you, if you can look at, there is a place I'm going, August, I'm going to Russia, the World Trade, they're going to help me go over to see the Lena pillars. And Lena is just L-E-N-A. It's absolutely amazing. These pillars are like anywhere from, say, 700 to 900 feet tall. They essentially go for 50 miles along the Lena River in eastern Russia. But these Lena pillars, I think, are worth looking at. You can Google them. They're amazing. They just, I saw them on CBS Evening News maybe 5 years ago. But before that, when I was a little kid, my mother showed them to me when she used to have all these magazines, these National Geographic magazines, when they were yellow. I think they're still yellow. I'm not sure. And so she had them and used to get them from the thrift shop. But I remember these things as a kid, and I just think this is now an opportunity to go and see this and have fun going a whole 50 miles to see these Lena pillars. It's interesting because, you know, just when you think, oh, you got something happening, then the information age comes along. I mean, I think everybody knew the information age was coming. There's a really good book on it called Third Wave by a guy named Alvin Toffler. And Alvin Toffler wrote Future Shock in 70 and Third Wave in 80 and then Power Shift. It was a trilogy of books. So, I mean, I knew this was coming. I'm sure a lot of people did, but they just didn't see the way it's constructed now. And then social media, I don't think anybody saw social media coming and just catching fire the way it has. So I think it's caught a lot of people off guard. Social media gives you that one degree of separation from everybody. So it's something that institutions of all, you know, education institutions, financial institutions are trying to figure out, like, where they fit in with LinkedIn. LinkedIn is not a big network, of course. It's coming, and it's crucial and necessary, but it's not huge. And I think where they probably could get better beyond, say, Facebook, where they're also strong, is maybe, say, on Instagram. Because Instagram is just visual. You know, it's all visual. And I even reached out to them just telling them, hey, listen, here's what you can do. You can actually, if you want to do, let's say, like one day, like let's say next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, or maybe even like a video, because now you can do you can do 60-second videos now, 60-second spots on Instagram. Anybody can. So there's so much there.
Well, you know, Sean, this is really interesting. Tam and I just had this conversation the other day, and we're seeing this with a lot of our own True North Story podcast guests who have a built-in social media apparatus that they're going to leverage along with us to help them when we launch their podcast episode. And what we're seeing is that it's not there. And this is people who are authors who have a publisher behind them, and we're in contact with the publisher. And so my question to you is, how much do people really understand how to use the tool, quote unquote, that is social media?
I don't think people really understand it a great deal. I think that there's still, I mean, because everybody uses it differently, you know. And this author was just saying she was trying to, you know, I guess she was reminiscing about the 90s and how, you know, you could, you know, how she, you know, she put, you know, yeah, you know, the New York, her book was a New York Times bestseller and how it happened. And she, and I knew all of that. And of course, you know, people would call in and say, oh, this book is doing this. And so I knew essentially how that happened. It's a little different now, a lot differently. But I mean, you know, these things are done differently, but she is still trying to, she doesn't spend a lot of time on Twitter. She doesn't spend a lot of time on, I think LinkedIn. She said LinkedIn's more corporate. All these kinds of things. But
right.
I was letting her know that just because Twitter is not necessarily, say, a big bookseller for people, you still should have that presence, because then you can do what? A, you can drive people to your Facebook page, to your Pinterest page. I think Pinterest, Facebook, increasingly Instagram are really good for social selling and really good for e-commerce. But still, you can use Twitter as this placeholder to drive people elsewhere. I still don't think she got it. You know, she's not selling the books that she used to sell. And I think it's just because social media has really seriously changed the game and other things. You know, she understands there are people working now three jobs where they used to work one. It's just the nature of the economy. And there's just so much that's out there. So if you know this, you just have to, I don't know, you just have to really make the adjustments. It may not necessarily work in 5 minutes. It may, because again, I have a million followers practically on Twitter, but it took me 4.5 years really to just, where things just started really rocking. And I felt like I was rocking in year one, but still, it just doesn't work in 5 minutes. And maybe that's the thing. Authors who used to, and political leaders and people who could just pick up the phone maybe at one point, or things could happen in just literally 5 minutes because of who they are. Now this big paradigm shift has happened, and they're trying to figure out where they fit in. And some people, I think, are just stubborn to the point where they just are not going to get that wide presence that they probably would need to keep book selling, to keep their awareness out there. You know, it's unfortunate. But, you know, I think people will find it out in their own way.
So is that an erosion of power? I mean, if you really look at it, the publishers or the media or broadcast television or record companies or film companies, they all had the control because they controlled the distribution. They controlled what did or didn't get seen, what did or didn't get recorded, what did or didn't get published. So that's all being blown up or disrupted, right?
Oh, it's incredibly disrupted. I think now you have a situation where, well, definitely you have people who have what they call these webcasts and webisodes. But now even like YouTube and others, I mean, that's where people are. They're on YouTube, they're not necessarily on Facebook. Facebook is going through a little something, and maybe at some point I'll get, you know, can get around to that. But YouTube is where so many young people and so many individuals who are content creators are spending a large portion of their time. So TV, yes, has seen a tremendous erosion of things. And then this is where I think YouTube is also where a lot of publishers now are going, believe it or not, because they're giving people who have millions of followers a particular book deal, because that's their thing is, hey, if these individuals follow these people on a daily basis and look at them and are, okay, what is Susan doing? What is Sean doing? Then they probably will also buy their books and these assorted things with their name on it. So much is out there, so much disruption, and so many moving parts that I think we still have not, we won't probably get to the point where people will say, okay, this is the new particular order of things, because innovation, it just happens like every 5 minutes. You have to stay on top of stuff every day, you know?
Sean, Forbes obviously recognized you at some point as being a social media influencer, like the number one social media influencer, if we want to get down to it.
Okay.
I just have to ask, you didn't necessarily grow up, I mean, you probably grew up like I did with vinyl records.
Sure.
I mean, I remember when the Max came out, you know, and Trash 80s from Radio Shack, you know, it was something new and we didn't exactly know how to use it. At some point, it lit you on fire, and you wanted to know how this thing works and how people can best utilize it. I mean, what turned you on to social media, and how did it grow from there?
I think, God, well, you know, first of all, I know Facebook. I was not one of the people who was on Facebook in 06 and 07 and even in 08. I was a late bloomer. In fact, I didn't post anything on Facebook until 2010, like January 2010.
Man, I think maybe I was on there before you were.
And then even LinkedIn, same thing. But I signed up for Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook in January of 2009.
Okay.
And I worked at I was in the financial industry. Financial industry had contracted 2008. So I went on and worked at... I had a part-time job, but I got a full-time job at this federal halfway house, which is, you know, which is in Tacoma, and it's very nondescript and it paid the bills. But I said, you know, obviously I didn't want necessarily, it was not what I wanted to do. It was more like just like you're drifting in the ocean on a log and then you, it's going to move you to the landmass that you're looking at. So it's not so much that social media was the land is the landmass either. It's just a means, you know, kind of to an end. That's the way I looked at it. So I said, okay, let me start doing this. So I worked graveyard shift, and I only posted on Twitter for like maybe for that first year. It was so terrible. A lot of my early tweets, I remember. I saw this tweet with like four or five names in it. Somebody had tweeted. I'm like, oh my God, I want to be in a tweet with four people. You know, it was funny. But then I, you know, because sometimes the hashtag will go first, and then sometimes the link would go first. It was just trying to find my footing on Twitter. But I finally did it. Around maybe April or May of 2009.
Let me ask you this. So it wasn't so much about the social aspect of it for you. Your left brain wanted to know, how does this work?
You know, I think at first that's what it was. Because, see, I'm more of an email person. I still love email. I know that I love email marketing. And I'll get to that in 1 second. Because I think some changes in social have really force individuals to just kind of rethink or to kind of embrace it a little bit more. But back then, yes, I just kind of wanted to know how it worked. But I am a very social person.
Right.
I love to connect with people. And I saw that it was increasingly global. It just wasn't a social media, it wasn't a North America-centric audience that I was attracting. You know, Southeast Asia, Middle East, Africa, Europe. So I said, this is good. So, and then I also was trying to get into Huffington Post at the same time. So Huffington Post let me in that summer. And I think that summer is also when I also tried to, I felt like, okay, I got this. But I didn't grow my following until September of 2009, because I had like 2,600 followers or whatever. And so I said, you know, I need a bigger following, not to appear, not so I can say I'm more important than someone, or I'm pretty big on Twitter, you know, but rather so that I felt like, and I think I was telling you, Tama, before, that one of the reasons I grew it is because, and people aren't like this. People say, I can't stand just, you know, like all these people send me this stuff and I don't know them. And I understand that point of view. But I see it as like, if you go to a conference and you hand out 1,000 business cards, obviously, everybody's not going to call you back, email you back, whatever it is. There's going to be a minority of people to do that. But then a lot of people are going to look you up. You can pretty much tell the percentage of people that are going to do certain things. But there's going to be a percentage of people who just maybe throw away your card, keep your card, and wonder, like, why did this person give me this? And so that's how I looked at growing my following on Twitter. So I grew it. I think I had 2,600 September, first, second week, and then I ended up at right at 10,000, I think, maybe the last week of that year. Yeah, I've been growing it ever since. I had it's a service. It used to be called Just Unfollow, but it's now called Crowdfire, crowdfireapp.com. And you can do this. Anybody can roughly do this. But that's why I did that. And so, yeah, so then the next year, you know, I said, I'm going to go ahead and start posting on LinkedIn, start posting on Facebook. So things worked out. Things really have worked out. And then I've stayed on top of some of the other sites that have come along, Pinterest, Instagram. I was not a big Instagram person at first. I mean, even though I'm a visual person, I still was not. But I can see you don't necessarily have to use it the way everybody else is using it. You can really bring your own level of creativity to bear and promote yourself and what you're doing, and cross promote too, which is something that I don't think people do a lot of in social media. So
yeah, tell about cross promotion.
Cross promotion is, or they say cross posting, you know, cross posting. It's just like, say, for example, you're in a country. So let's say Toby Keith decided he had this hot tune that he's coming out with, and yet he was having two or three people that he has signed on to his new label. He has a label. He can bring them on, and then they can sing the second verse and the third verse, and now he's giving them some love. He's promoting them,
right,
and also promoting, obviously, what his label is coming out with, so he's going to benefit from that. So in much the same way, if you blog on LinkedIn, you can post that blog post on Twitter. You can post that same blog post on Facebook. And the cool part about you know, posting that in different places, even Pinterest, is that people will say, oh, this is a LinkedIn post. Oh, this is Tama. This is Sean. Who is, you know, that kind of thing. So they're going to go and then really sort of look at profile. So you can do that. You can post. I know that Instagram also has a desktop feature. So then you can also tell people, hey, just post it such and such on Instagram. And then you can do that. No, but I think a lot of people will post on Instagram. They'll allow Instagram to post the Instagram link on Twitter. What I do is rather than doing that, I'll upload the same picture I put on Instagram and then insert the link. Because people are more likely to click on a link that also has a
something
like a link
visual.
With, right.
Yeah. So a picture and a link.
Absolutely. So there's some really creative ways that people can do that with Twitter. And that's why I say Twitter, if you're not going to spend a lot of time on it, allow it to, at the very least, be a placeholder for you to build up your presence and followers and so forth.
Yeah, it's interesting, Sean. Tim and I have kind of been noticing some changes in the way social media has posted things, certainly in feeds and video and rankings. Can you talk just a little bit about some of this changing? We're hearing lots about new algorithms. We're seeing it with Twitter. Now we've heard that Instagram is jumping into that same game.
Right.
LinkedIn did it a while ago. And all of a sudden, you know, you don't see what you're posting anymore. You're seeing things that they think you want to see. It just gets a little confusing. So
sure.
Maybe you can shed some insight into that.
Yeah. I know definitely that there was a good article in Adweek, and it said, what can marketers do now that free social media is over? And it was a really great eye-opening piece. I knew essentially that this was taking place. If you remember, 2013, late October, because I spend a lot of time online, but I remember early in the morning, I tweeted something, and I didn't think that the image could be seen, you know, that it would stand out on your feed on Twitter. And then so Twitter, they went on and made this change. They made it sort of more in line with the social web. And the social web, of course, you know, the visual web, rather, I'm sorry. And the visual web, of course, being Instagram and Pinterest. They made their site more like that. And so what it did is, it's like individuals would now see stuff and they were more likely to retweet an image with the, in a tweet. And so I started seeing that you could promote things. Throughout 2014, nothing really happened. And then in late 2014, I saw that whatever stuff that I would get like 1,000 retweets on, I was getting 500 on. Just like that. I was like,
something's changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, something changed. And, you know, just it was interesting. And then so I sort of would try to like piggyback on to maybe certain things that were in the trending topics. And then so then I got a lot of that share back. But then they did it again, like in the spring of 2015, and so then they made another change 7 weeks ago. It's algorithm change. So yes, Twitter is that way. Also, Instagram is not there yet, but Instagram is coming. I know that people are freaking out because a lot of people have made money off of Instagram. Instagram is just it's huge. Even though Instagram has had a huge drop off from where it was just like last year at this time, the beginning of last year, it still gets more engagement than Facebook, than Twitter, than Instagram, obviously LinkedIn. It gets more engagement than just about all of the big five or big six, if you will. So yes, everybody is toying with this, with algorithm. Even Pinterest has an algorithm. So you have to pay to reach the majority of people. You can really get, not to say the majority of people who follow you to see you, but just a greater share of people to see you and what you're doing. So, for example, on Monday, there's Monday Motivation. That's a big hashtag, maybe the biggest hashtag of any Monday on Twitter. Also on Wednesday, there's like Wednesday Wisdom, right? And so the same thing a lot of times that people post on Wednesday, Monday, they may post sometimes on Wednesday. And then on Friday, Friday feeling is like, yes, this is amazing. It's the wakey-way weekend. And so that's what people, you know, will post something about how good, you know, something I don't know, something that feels good to them. And so then on the weekend, I may use two hashtags sometimes, and I use them interchangeably. Think Big Sunday with Marsha. There's this woman, the big author in London. And then, and of course, the one from Oprah Winfrey, Super Soul Sunday. So I do that. And yeah, I think I get some really good traction from that. But I understand your point about how people are not necessarily seeing things. Like if on your Facebook, Facebook's been that way for a while. But yes, if people right. can say volume, they can say, oh, lots of people are using our service. That's what you hear first. No, it is money. It is. It's volume, yes. But in the case of an Instagram and obviously a Facebook, this is also money. I read a good piece about how Facebook is making great money for its investors. But of course, with any investment, you're going to want it to continue to make even more money.
Right.
So the Instagram algorithm, you have to look at it in that particular light right there. But like I said, I think people will have to do two things. One, cross post. Don't just, you know, when you cross post, you are creating value on more than one platform. So just kind of look at it like that. But then the other part of it mm-hmm. is that individuals will have to now see how they can get emails. Email marketing will probably be the rage. And I think for a lot of millennials who want you to communicate with them in social, they're, you know, probably going to be a point where they say, well, you know, if they're not, stuff's not getting through, particularly for the more entrepreneurial millennials, they're going to push this big push to get people to communicate in email, which is really 1,000 times more effective than social media. It's just that millennials and Gen Z want you to communicate with them in digital, if that makes sense.
Learn, love, listen, live. This is True North Story, the original podcast series. And now back to the program.
Or in the social media world, and hearing you say go back to email again to make things happen, right? To communicate.
Yeah, yeah. And let me just tell you this. I think that, like, for example, take Twitter. One of the things that, and I work for a financial institution, things that we're doing is we're actually trying to put together something called Twitter cards. And it's a really very effective way of getting emails. Twitter cards, you can actually design them. But what happens is when somebody follows you, whether it's like 5 minutes after they follow you, an hour after, for whatever it may be, when they follow you, they will get, and then this is probably better than getting like an automated DM. I know people, it just totally makes them mad. I mean, people are busy, so let them do whatever it is, all right? I mean, I understand that. But if you want to sort of sidestep that anger that's out there in terms of sending someone, say, an automated DM, you can actually develop something called Twitter cards. It's very effective, and you can get emails from people. You can have them to sign up to say, hey, listen, sign up to our newsletter or sign up here, whatever. And this could be actually tweeted to them. It's in their feed. It comes to their feed. Say, thank you so much. Whatever language you're using, that's how you can actually get the emails. Probably not just the Twitter cards, but people are going to find some very creative ways to start getting even more email. Because, yes, you won't be able to see the majority of people who follow you unless you shell out the dollars.
For a while there, it was like, how many followers do you have? Mm-hmm. Or how many people see your stuff? But it sounds like it's getting back to the individual engagement.
Yeah, I think that could be quite effective. Now, if it's definitely on Instagram, because nobody knows what Instagram's going to look like. Stars that are on it are like, oh my God, they're going to change it. Nobody's going to see me.
Ah.
You see? Stars are jittery about it. But no, I think that folks would want, yeah, it could get back to the individual engagement, which is really great. I think that's what makes the medium social. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you don't want to just blast out stuff. If folks are engaging you, there's nothing wrong with just engaging them. I mean, when I look at, if you on a mobile device and you look at Richard Branson, and probably Richard Branson's not on it all the time. Maybe he's got some people that look after it. His account is engaging just your everyday peeps. I mean, that's the way you have to really do it. And so if it calls for a situation where you don't have the money that Richard Branson has to shell out so that a lot of people see, you know, your stuff, then yes, you just have to really do that, whether that's privately or whether that's publicly.
Mm-hmm.
You got to keep doing it. So keep people interested. And then also remind people to follow you, to put you on a list. you know what I'm saying, remind people of that. Say, hey, listen, thank you so much for the follow. You know, you can put me on a Twitter list and or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? You can remind people, or you can remind them even in an email. To, you know, that kind of thing, because some of the stuff you're doing, you're interviewing people, whatever you're into, if you can remind people of that, it doesn't even have to be a public Twitter list, but it just putting you on a list, that means you're going to bypass whatever algorithm it is. The algorithm is not going to necessarily affect your Twitter listings, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like a file.
It is.
These are all my friends who write poetry, or these are all my friends that are into this that I'm into.
Right.
So I can go to that list and I can see exactly what they're posting.
Sure, sure.
And interact with that group of people.
Absolutely. And you want people to perhaps, you know, to do the same thing to you. Like I started on Twitter list when it came out, like 09. So I think probably like 15,000 or 16,000 lists, just public lists that I'm on. Maybe it probably might be more than that, but I know definitely that because of what I do and the places I go, I'm sure, you know, it's even more, and even more people follow me, just like I'm sure behind the scenes and that I can't see. So, you know, whether somebody follows you publicly or privately on a Twitter list, you would definitely want to just kind of remind them, hey, definitely put us on a list. That way you won't miss out on any of our cool updates, the people we're interviewing, whatever it is. I tell people that all the time. Definitely stress that.
So. Make some lists and ask to be on lists.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Think about this. I mean, when we talked before, you had said something about how you had not been out of the United States until just a few years ago.
Yeah, 2014.
So social media has allowed you to see the world.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. I spoke at the Smithsonian Institution, and I grew up in D.C. You know, I would always take a date, you know, to the Smithsonian, you know, feeling pretty good about myself.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, you could see a lot for not a lot of money.
Absolutely. And yeah, you know, you get some popcorn, some cotton candy or whatever. Go, hey, you know what, girl, what's up? You know, but I spoke there and it was very humbling because I, you know, that was a place also I had to go to do a paper. You know, yeah, you had to kind of do like on like an exhibit.
A research.
Right. So when I spoke there, it must have, you know, caused a tremor in the force.
Okay. The universe responded.
Absolutely. Because the event, like, still in D.C. 2 days later. And then the Social Media World Forum is called, they call 6 Degrees. They're out in London. They reached out to me and said, you know, they had heard about me and heard about, you know, Smoke at the Smithsonian recently. I was like, wow. So, and that was just through tweets. So this woman who had me on a list, she decided to follow me now and said, hey, Sean, we want you to be our keynote speaker. And this was in London. And so that was March. This was the very next month. That was February when I spoke at the Smithsonian, which was humbling in itself. I spoke about 30 minutes about Twitter. And then, the next month I spoke in London. And so
had you ever been a keynote speaker?
No. No, I never.
But you said yes.
I said yes. And so it was funny because they said, hey, listen, you know, you've given some. I said, yeah, I've given lots of, you know, talks and so forth. And then I think somebody did ask me, so have you keynoted? I said, well, yeah, you know, is that the Smithsonian? That's Smithsonian.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
You're
like, okay, well, look, we want you. So, and he knew that I, at that point, you know, Forbes the previous year. So I went and I was freaking just so nervous. And, you know, the Brits don't emote. A lot of them don't emote. So, you know.
It's very true.
Yeah.
You just don't know
right.
how
yeah.
you're coming across.
Yeah, right, right. It's just like, you know, it's like a, you know, like that. I mean, and then when they talk to you later, it's like, I really, really liked what you did. So I got up there and I went through Heathrow. Oh, my God, freaking Heathrow Airport. I mean, you know, and I saw Wembley Stadium. I remember the Live Aid from 1985.
Sure.
I saw that.
Yeah,
I saw
sure.
that on TV. So, and that was great because that was maybe like something that this kind of like helped to craft my view of technology and philanthropy, believe it or not. You know what I mean? So, I mean, just because that's really what that was, a combination of philanthropy and technology for the greater good. So I saw Wembley coming in, spoke at the same place they did the MTV Europe Awards. Yeah. So I got up on stage and it was 1,600 people there. And you could hear a pin drop when the guy introduced me. And, you know, they clapped a little bit. So I get up there. I told a joke. And this is my first ever out of the United States, first ever keynote anything Nobody laughed. So here's what I did. I said, okay, if you can even picture somebody asking themselves a question in a nanosecond, do I tell another joke or do I go into my presentation? And in a nanosecond, I picked go into the presentation. So I went into it. So I said, okay, so social media, you know, went into it and they were clicking on it and so forth. I finished maybe 20, 25 minutes and it's just like that, just 7 or 8 people.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So hold on. So I just smiled and grinned and I like, oh my God, a freaking bomb. But I just like, yeah, all right, London. So asked three questions. Three people asked, you know, and they just all
out of 1,600.
Yeah, I think. But I think, you know, also too, sometimes people are nervous. But then when the third guy came along, they said, "Okay, Sean, we really love that." You know, the guy from the BBC was the moderator. Oh my God, I get down and maybe at least 300 people were like, "I feel 10 times smarter. That is so amazing. That is awesome." I was like, I mean, you know, you talking about being lifted up. There's, oh, I was like, so at the end of the day, they said my presentation. Now, there were some pretty big veterans there, you know, but at the end of the day, they said my presentation was the best, the crowd. And then the second day, they did it again. They said my presentation was the one, the best presentation of the entire conference.
And you were talking Twitter? Basically,
Just social media in general. I was telling them, like, for example, like what my style is, because obviously everybody has a style. And I said my style, I felt, was at least my brand, my social media brand, was information, inspiration, and aspiration. And I said inspiration because I think, you know, obviously people want to be inspired. But when people are inspired and they're informed about the issues, that has a very profound effect on the things that they aspire to do. When you're inspired to do it, whether that comes from somebody saying something to you or whether it's internal, whether you're informed about your choices, not just issues, but just choices. Yeah. You say, okay, you know, that just that affects, you know, your direction and say, okay, you know, I think I can do this. Let me go ahead and pursue this. So I feel like my content, just the combination of everything, really kind of gives people that. And I know this because people will say, "Oh my gosh, Sean, thank you for retweeting that. I really needed that today. And God, man, oh, I didn't even know that. Yeah, I'm going to share that with my, you know, my girlfriend or whatever it is." You know, I get that every single week, multiple times, and people do like it. I know they love it. So I was talking about that, and then giving people a good sense of where I thought social was going. Yeah, that was really it, and they loved it. They just totally loved it. And I think the one knock somebody tweeted was that I didn't talk about whether I felt a brand could do. I was talking about myself, but I also told the guy when I saw him later on, I said, "All you have to do, man, if you are helpful, if you're complimentary, those are the things that really resonate with people. You know, if you're ugly and you want to just participate in tearing people down." There's an audience for that. But, you know, I just feel like, yeah, if you want some good vibes and you want people to have this really great feeling about you and your brand, why not just go ahead and transport that over that, you know, this blueprint of being complimentary, being helpful, being inspiring over to the social media channels of your particular business or your particular brand. So, and I think he got that when I said it that way. So this was a big hit. And then they invited me, some big guy invited me to Germany. I had never been to Germany. I recognized also that Germans don't tweet. It was a big article in the Wall Street Journal.
Really?
6 reasons Germans don't tweet.
That's interesting.
Yes, they don't. They don't. It's a really good article. And I think when I say don't tweet, obviously you have people here and there who are on it. But I think it's, if you look at it, there's a good hashtag called digital diplomacy. Digital diplomacy is essentially like diplomats, heads of state using this and communicating with each other. This was a big movement that caught fire in 2009. Most countries were not on Twitter or Facebook, didn't even have a Facebook or Twitter presence. Now they do. Most countries do. So I think Germans, it just has related where, hey, maybe we're going to go ahead and leave this to the diplomats, to the heads of state. But yes, most people outside of business and politics do not tweet. And so when I was there, they were like, hey, well, I'll just connect with you on Facebook, man. I'm not, you know, I don't really do a lot of tweeting. So there, yeah. And they were, and the Germans couldn't be any more different than the Brits. Both great individuals, but I went up there and they were just like, yeah, you know, just they were on their feet, a different crowd, but they both consumed it the same way. It was just they received me differently, if that makes sense.
So it's cultural.
It is. It is. And I think going, I was happy that I did that because going through that, like just from Great Britain to Germany, which is nowhere, I said, hey, before I go to a country, let me research the customs. And so every country I go to, I went to, spoke in 9 countries last year. So I researched all of the customs before I went there. You know, in terms of like just, you know, like greet people, things right. you may not want to say, things that may come off differently because it's a, you know, you're coming from a different culture. And I think I hit it off, yeah, pretty much everywhere I went. So
I've always learned that it as Americans, we always, you know, kind of figured that our ways is everybody's
is
way.
Is the way, absolutely.
And I had a friend tell me something that I took with me, that it's not wrong what they're doing. It's just different.
Different, that's right.
It's just different.
It is.
When in Rome, when in Mumbai.
Right.
That's what you do.
I know. Because, I mean, you know, one thing though, I will tell you guys this. I was going down, if you ever go to Mumbai, it's Marine Drive. Marine Drive is where a lot of the rich and famous, it's so beautiful. It's almost like going down like 101, you know, when you're like in Santa Monica, Venice, Redondo Beach. And I did play Smokey Robinson going down Marine Drive. So the guy said, what is that? What music is that? He said, I said, Smokey Robinson.
Quiet storm, wind, through my life, through my life. You're just like a quiet storm, wind, through my life, through my life, through my life, through my life.
He just thought that was like, he said, oh, it's very smooth.
There's going to be a run on Smokey Robinson music in India, and you're going to be the reason why.
So. Oh, I know, man. I know, and I loved. Now, that wasn't really, maybe, I think, because I went to India last year, and then I went to India this year. That is probably maybe one of the most fascinating countries, the most fascinating country I think I've been to, because it's growing, and it's a lot of people, and you have like over 100 languages that are spoken in India. So, and it's a very communal place. I remember talking about my mother in my presentation, talking about National Geographic. And then when a lot of folks came to me afterwards, they was like, that's really good. Your mom, she got you in, you know. And so it was like, they just say, you know, my mom does this, my father does this. And, you know, so it's a very communal society. Individuals are,
right.
they love family, they love community. And so if you are Indian, I have a friend who I know in L.A., she says whenever she goes back to Mumbai, she has to go and spend time. You just can't, like, you know, there's an expectation. Like, you got to at least spend an hour or 2 hours there, and they're going to cook for you, and they're going to talk to you, and then you can get into whatever it is you're going to get into. But that's the society, and now that's just a growing society. But it was a great time.
I think this might be a great question to end on. We hear a lot about social media being focused on the individual, mm-hmm. and how we can leverage our own videos, our own photographs, and updates. It's all from me first, mm-hmm. and it's being put out to the collective. What are you seeing? What trends are you seeing, Sean, that globally now, as we're starting to impact more of the world is participating, we're only a click or a tweet or a message away, where the collective is maybe benefiting more than the individual from the use of social media now?
Well, the big trend, just so you know, this year is digital storytelling. That's a big, I mean, I know definitely folks have been trying to get into it or trying to push it in years past. But I think now businesses and even just individuals who are, you know, trying to really grow themselves as a brand are getting into this. So that's a big trend. I could pretty much see that being maybe the dominant trend, you know, moving forward. I mean, I really can, because it's not even just digital storytelling, but it's the episodic content. So let's say you and Tama, this really is, you could say, This is episodic content. And so if you package it that way, just podcasting, episodic content, then that's pretty hot. So I could see that catching fire, even catching even greater fire. It can becoming a true inferno. But in terms of how something that the collective could benefit from, I think one of the big things, let me tell you, one of the big things that I really love is Giving Tuesday. Giving Tuesday was a social media generated initiative. And you know it is because whenever you see it, it has the hashtag Giving Tuesday. So very clearly, they're trying to send that message that, hey, connect with us online, see what's going on online. It first was a North America-centric event, you know, Canada, primarily the United States. And then I got in, they asked me to join and become an ambassador, maybe like a couple of months after Forbes had bestowed me that honor. And I just said, I helped them with strategy. That's pretty much what I tweet stuff out and post things onto other platforms. And I said, you know what, why not just do it on Tuesday? Why not just go ahead and maybe promote this on different days? So what I started doing really for 7-8 months, and I know people were looking, is I started putting some with some quotes. Mm-hmm. And that became the big, big thing. And so now it's to the point where it was, say, a handful of countries. And now, I think last year, we were in roughly 80 countries. So I think that philanthropy, wow, certainly social, certainly Twitter, you know, Google Plus at some point when it was doing really well, it helped. Facebook definitely has helped. In fact, Mark Zuckerberg, when he did his big announcement about him giving the money, he made his announcement on Giving Tuesday. So these are the big things. In fact, I remember that because the BBC, they asked me, I was on the BBC early in the morning talking about Mark Zuckerberg and philanthropy and Giving Tuesday. So that's an initiative. I don't really see it stop because it raised in 2014, what is it, like 47 million or 46 million in one day. That was great fundraising. That was a record. And then last year, it jumped to like 100 and I think it was 117, 118 million, somewhere in that range there.
Whoa.
Yeah, and that's just collectively. So people are raising money off of it. They're doing service projects off of it. I can see it probably crossing the 100 country plane this year. And I'm going to do whatever I can to help make that happen. And I might even end up doing a service project in another country that doesn't quite have Giving Tuesday and maybe a region where it's sort of some slow adoption of Giving Tuesday. So I will be out of the country on Giving Tuesday this year. I'm just having to figure out like which country and in what type of project I'll do. So I think, just to answer your question, I think Giving Tuesday is probably that locomotive, digital locomotive that started as, you know, again, well-intentioned for the world, North America-centric, and has now become this global phenomenon through social media.
So what's next for Sean Gardner?
Oh. Wow. I am going to continue to speak. I'm going to Medellin, Colombia. The business community and Medellin, they heard about me, and so they invited me.
Let me
to
guess,
come.
Through social media?
Through social media. Yes, they reached out to me. Can I tell you what the deal is? I'm going to tell you this real quick. About what has really helped me is not so much just Twitter and say, Facebook and Instagram and Pinterest, but I want to say this really to any millennials. That I know millennials are really just kind of just Snapchat and Instagram, but one of the things that keeps things going for me is LinkedIn. I swear to you. That
really?
Is LinkedIn. LinkedIn is... Mm.
Now, I just saw like a big headstone with RIP LinkedIn.
Yeah, no, I get it. Now, I know that people say LinkedIn is very corporate and so forth, but there are two ways I use it. One is I rewrote my summary, 2013, rewrote the summary. So it was third person as opposed to first person. Because I figured when you jump down to like all of my positions, it's going to say corroborated or collaborated or devised or created, those action verbs that you look for. Those are clearly me, myself, and I. That says me. Here's what I did. So if you kind of change it up and make maybe put a little storytelling, a third person thing, you could really draw people's attention. So people compliment me every week on
your LinkedIn.
On my LinkedIn summary. Yes, they do. Every single week. And I've had a third person summary going on for about, like I said, I guess it's like 2.5 years now, 2013. But that's what really started getting me a lot of speaking. So yes, people will communicate with me through Twitter, but they can see who looked at me. I'll see them there. So either they communicate with me on Twitter or communicate with me on LinkedIn. But LinkedIn is where a lot of people go. And so then I'm able to also upload, you know, where I'm going, where I'm speaking. So therefore, that creates a kind of a momentum. So it's like people already who are doing stuff next year, like 3 or 4 conferences, contacted me. So that's, you know, you can really build great profile of yourself and create that impression through LinkedIn. I just promote that on Twitter.
That's what I was going to ask.
And just drive people toward that through LinkedIn. So, yeah, again, you don't have to spend time on any one platform. I know people that just are strictly LinkedIn or strictly Twitter or strictly Instagram. But, yes, make your LinkedIn presence such that when you go to sleep, it's like I said, social media is international currency. So invest well. So just the way a banker is investing money, you're investing in social media. And when that banker sleeps, when you sleep, your investment is going to pay dividends.
You know, have diversity in your portfolio.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. Deborah. Yes. Absolutely. I might use that one. I might say yes.
Yes, from Banker Sean. Yeah, this lady I know, she told me this.
Yes, I'm going to do that. Yes, the next time I go and use that, I'm going to use that. I'm going to quote you. Yes, I am.
Thank you for listening to True North Story, the series. Follow us on Twitter @True North Story and tune in next time for another True North Story.